Hello and welcome to Light the Way with Dr. Colin Monger. He's the senior pastor of Shepherd of the Hills Church. At Light the Way, we believe the most powerful tool we possess when sharing our faith with others is the Word of God. It was the Apostle Paul that said, "Faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the Word of Christ." So as we open the Word together, it's our prayer that you'll not only receive what God has for you, but share what you learn with those you come in contact with. And now, here's Pastor Colin.
Would you open your Bibles? We're in the book of Philippians, chapter 1. Philippians, chapter 1. I want to talk this morning about overcoming adversity in life. Whether we call it adversity, or obstacles, or oppositions, or whatever else it is you want to say, we all know what we're talking about. You'll be going along life, and everything is going well, and then out of nowhere, something comes up, and it challenges your mission. And you have to make a decision. What will you do? Will you keep going? Will you persevere? Will you try harder? Or do you give up? Do you go home? Do you call it quits? Cut your losses. Jesus said in John chapter 16, in the world you will have tribulation. And so it's not unheard of. We've all been there. Some of us are there right now, aren't we? We're facing something hard in life and we're feeling the temptation to quit, to throw in the towel and walk away. Could be a job we hate. Could be a boss that we can't please. Could be a hard relationship. Or the prospect of a long and hard treatment plan for an illness we never saw coming. It could be school and you're thinking of giving up. When I was in seminary, part of my doctoral research was to write a paper on the attrition levels of doctoral candidates or students in college. And it didn't matter what the program was. What I found was 2/3 of all of them don't graduate. And that's because it's hard. And it takes a long time, hundreds of papers, thousands of hours, it seems, assignments, professors, and then you come to the dissertation phase where you have to do hours and hours of research, and then ultimately you sit down in front of a board of people whose job it is to question everything you've poured your heart and soul into and then try and cause you to question the same thing. And for 66% of all students, it isn't worth it. They give up. They go home. On the other hand, a third don't. A third graduate. And in life, some people do persevere. Some people do keep going. But why? Why do some keep going? What makes those people different? Well, the answer I found in my research was more often than not, it's having a right frame of mind. It's an attitude that says, it doesn't matter what comes my way. I'm not going to quit. It doesn't matter how hard it gets or how many people might be against me. I'm not giving up. I'm going to be stubborn to succeed. Well, I want to encourage you to be stubborn to succeed. And that's what we want to talk about today. I want to give you a biblical frame of mind for overcoming adversity in life. Now, that doesn't mean you won't have adversity. It doesn't mean life will all of a sudden be easy. But it does mean that when, and not if, but rather when adversity happens, you will have the right frame of mind. You will have the tools and the perspective you need to overcome any challenge that comes your way. I ask you to open your Bibles to Philippians 1. We're only going to look at 3 verses this morning. Notice what it says beginning in verse 12. I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel, so that it has become known throughout the whole imperial guard and to all the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. And most of the brothers, having become confident in the Lord by my imprisonment, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. One of the first things to notice about overcoming adversity is just simply the fact that adversity is there. It exists. It's a normal part of life. Remember, Jesus said in John 16, in the world you will have tribulation. Adversity is a normal thing. Just because you are facing some opposition against something it is you're trying to do doesn't necessarily mean you've done anything wrong. In fact, it could mean you've done everything right. Adversity is normal. It was part of Paul's life, no doubt. Because even as he writes this letter to the church at Philippi, a letter where the topic and the theme is all about joy, he sits in a jail, a Roman jail, chained to a Roman guard 24 hours a day. And it wasn't because he did anything wrong, but because he did everything right. Notice what he says in verse 13. My imprisonment is for Christ. Not crime, not thievery, but because of the gospel he was preaching. Even the noblest of missions in life will face adversity. Someone somewhere will try and oppose you, and it doesn't matter what you're doing. I heard a story one time of a restaurant. It was a type of restaurant that sold sandwiches and soup and that kind of a thing. And they decided that they weren't comfortable throwing all of that food away at the end of the day when there were so many homeless people in their city. And so what they decided to do was at the end of the day, any homeless who would come by, they would give the food away, and they fed a lot of people. They were getting accolades and praise from the community, and everybody loved it. Except for one person. It wasn't long before that same restaurant found itself on the inside of a courtroom being sued because someone said it was wrong to give away day-old food to people. You could dig a well for a desert nation and someone would say the water isn't good enough. You could open up a gymnasium for homeless people to sleep on a cold night and someone somewhere would say that it's insensitive to put them all in one room and make people sleep on the floor. The point is, you will have opposition in life. You will have adversity in life. Paul did. Notice he says in verse 12, what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel. You know, we hear that word advance and we think the gospel just took off, that it spread like wildfire around the world. Today online, you might even say it went viral, that one friend heard it and shared it with two, who shared it with four, who shared it with eight, and on down the line. You know, I was looking at the most viral video in the history of YouTube, as far as I can tell, and it's a fairly recent video called Charlie Bit My Finger. Now, you might have seen this video, but it's about 50 seconds long, and it takes place in the UK. Charlie looks to be about a one-year-old boy, and his older three- or four-year-old brother is sitting on a couch next to him. Well, the older brother takes his finger and puts it into Charlie's mouth. Well, at 1 year old, children have teeth that are as sharp as beavers, you know, and what do you think he does? He bites, and it hurts. And the boy starts crying, and he goes, Charlie, Charlie, let go. And then finally he gets his finger out, and he goes, Charlie bit me. Takes 50-some seconds to watch. There's no plot. There's no point. That's all there is. It's been viewed more than 850 million times. It went viral. And often that's what we think about in the early church, that it went viral. That Paul would go around to all these cities and there would be these great Billy Graham-style crusades and people would be flocking to the altar calls, confessions and baptisms and tears of joy over all of this new freedom, captives set free, kind of like when the Allied armies of World War II would roll through a liberated city in Europe. How the army would move through and people would be on the rooftops throwing confetti and the girls would be running into the line of soldiers, kissing them all on the cheek. And there was music and there was dancing. And that's what we think about. But that's not at all what happened. Because the word advanced does not mean spread. It does not mean went viral. It literally means it was forced. It cut its way forward. Much like a trailblazer leaves a beaten path and slices and hits at all the vegetation to make for a new road, cutting his way forward. I was at a pastor's conference this past year, and one of the speakers was talking about this same thing, and he compared it to a ship leaving dock and how it crashes against all the waves and the current and the tide on its way out to sea. How every single inch of forward progress is against the current of the ocean. or like an ice-breaking vessel of the North and South Poles, how they crash into these giant icebergs and these giant sheets of ice to make way for people to come in behind them. This is not Paul celebrating a welcomed reception. He says what happened worked to overcome adversity. And notice what else he says. What happened to me. He doesn't say for me or with me. Literally, he says what happened against me. You see, there will be times in your life where you will deal with adversity in the face of progress, where people will be against you, and they'll tell you that you're going to fail. It'll never work. Might as well give up and go home. I think of that, and right away, what comes to mind is the story of Job. And how Job faced great adversity because of his faith. And it was his wife who said, Job, curse God and die and just get it over with. It's never going to turn around for you. Sometimes this adversity will come from people you thought were on your side. And yet they won't support your mission. They won't support your goals or your message or your ministry or your dreams. Paul dealt with that as well. When he would go off into the ministry field, he would often take people with him. And they would be co-laborers in this work of evangelizing the world and spreading the gospel. And one time, one particular man is named. And it isn't with an attitude of joy, but rather with a broken heart. Paul says in 2 Timothy 4, Demas has left me. My dad used to say, there are days when it's all uphill. But the key is, don't give up. Be stubborn to succeed. In 2 Corinthians 4, it says, we are afflicted but not crushed, perplexed but not driven to despair, persecuted but not forsaken, struck down but not destroyed. Adversity is a part of life. It's a normal part of life. And for the believer, it is an expected part of life. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, blessed are you when you're persecuted for my name's sake. He says in John chapter 15, if the world hates you, know that it hated me first. He goes on to say in that same passage, if you were of the world, it would love you. But because you are not, because I called you out of it, the world will hate you. And so adversity is normal, it's expected, it's a part of life. But often, and this is the second thing, adversity provides an opportunity. Notice in verse 12 it says, what has happened to me, against me, has really served to advance the gospel. You know, there's no doubt that Paul was facing hard times in life. He was hated by just about everyone. He was hated by the Pharisees who used to be his own. You know, Paul even talks about that. He says he was a Pharisee of Pharisees. He was a teacher of the law. He was a part of the high court there in Israel. He was hated by them. He was hated by the pagans. He was hated by the Romans. Right now, he sits in a Roman jail because he dared to speak the message of Jesus. And he's waiting to see a Caesar who will likely hate him as well, who very well may put him to death. Or let him go. Paul has no idea. It's a hard time for him. But rather than looking at his circumstance as an opposition to his ministry, he looks at this as an opportunity for ministry. If he's going to be chained to a Roman guard for 24 hours a day, he's going to control the conversation. And guess what they're going to hear every day of their life? He doesn't complain. He doesn't shut down. He doesn't give up. He speaks the gospel. He evangelizes the guards. He takes his ministry with him. Paul turns the very same chains that were designed to keep him in custody into an opportunity to speak to a captive audience, literally. I'm sure those guards dreamt for shift change, to finally be released to go home. For Paul, that was the start of second service. And the point is, when you have the right frame of mind, you will look at adversity that way. It will be an opportunity in a different package. James puts it that way in James 1. He says, count it joy when you meet trials of various kinds, because you know that it will make your faith stronger. The key is to have the right perspective, to have the right frame of mind, to be stubborn to succeed. I was reading a bio of a man the other day. He has since died. But it says, at 5 years old, his father died. At 16 years old, he quit school. At 17 years old, he was fired from 4 jobs that year. When he was 18 years old, he was married. When he was 20 years old, his wife left him and took their child. And so he took a job as a line cook in a restaurant where he spent the next 45 years of his life. At 65, he retired. And he started to work on his last will and testament, but he felt ashamed, having never accomplished anything in his life. And so he said that was it. He was going to make a change. He borrowed $87, and Colonel Sanders started KFC. You see, it's easy to give up when things are hard. It's easy to go home and turn around as soon as we see an obstacle in our path. But you could be missing an opportunity in disguise. And what's more than that is what comes your way might even be better than what you originally had in mind. That's what happens here. Notice what Paul says in verse 12. What has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel. That word really, we don't get this in the English version, but if you were to look at that in Greek, what you would find is it literally translates to better than the alternative, better than what was expected. And so you could read this verse to say, what has happened against me is better than what I planned because it has pushed the gospel forward into a hostile world. How often do we look at adversity that way? How often do we resist what God is doing because it wasn't what we had in mind? It wasn't what we planned. It wasn't what we expected. It was different, maybe, than the way we had always done it. In Proverbs chapter 16, it says, "The heart of the man plans his way, but the Lord establishes his steps." And so don't be afraid when challenges in life come at you. Don't be afraid to face adversity in your walk with the Lord. It could be an opportunity that is better than what you expected. Third, watch your activity. We have adversity, opportunity, activity. It's tempting when things get hard to stop moving. It's tempting to freeze, to sit down, to turn into a spiritual couch potato. But stay active. Notice it says in verse 13, Paul is in jail, but it has become known throughout the whole imperial guard and to all the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. Well, how do you think it became known? Because he told them all about it. He kept moving. And so stay active. When I was a cop, I worked in the jail for a period of time, and I remember looking at some of the inmates who had long sentences to serve, and yet they would get out at some point and have a great deal of their life left to live. And yet I would watch many of these people, and they would do nothing to better themselves. The jail would offer school to get your GED or even a college education. They wouldn't do it. It would offer programs to help with addiction. They wouldn't do it. It would offer opportunities to be of service. They wouldn't do it. They wouldn't go to church. They wouldn't go to groups. They just kind of sat around and did nothing. And often when people face adversity, the same thing happens. They stop. They sit around. They do nothing. They're not productive. They shut down. They look at all of what's going on around them and they say, "What's the point? Why bother? No one supports me. They're all against me. No one believes in me. It's harder than I thought. I'll probably fail. Other people have." In Paul's case, he could have even said, "Demas has abandoned me. I'm all by myself out here." It's easy to give up when those things happen. But notice Paul doesn't give up. In verse 13, he makes it known to everyone that he's there because of Jesus. He finds a way to be active. He finds a way to be productive where he is. You know, another good story of how that happened was after Jesus was crucified and was entombed and he rose again, but before he appeared to the disciples, they had no idea what they were going to do in life. Put yourself in their shoes. They had followed Jesus for 3.5 years. He guided them. He taught them. He was the rock that they leaned against in times of need. He was everything, their spiritual guide. He was their teacher. He was their father. And now he was gone. They didn't know what to do. I've met a number of couples and been around a lot of people who have been married for a long time. And one day one of them passes away and the other doesn't know how to make decisions in life. They don't know how to pay the bills online. They don't even have the passwords to the bank account. It can be unsettling in life when someone you've trusted in for so long is suddenly gone. But that was them. 3.5 years they followed him. They gave up careers, they gave up respect, they gave it all up for Jesus, and now he was gone. What would they do? Nobody would blame them if they just sat around and did nothing. It would almost be expected. But Peter says in the Gospel of John, "I am going fishing." And the others said, "We will go with you." It might not be the most glamorous thing to do, but they didn't stop. They kept moving. They did something they were good at. And so the point for us is this. Life is not always the mountaintop. Sometimes you're going through the valley, but keep moving. Keep producing. Keep serving. Stay active. In Psalm 23, David tells us, "Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil." David didn't stop because the valley was there. He kept moving. He kept walking. He didn't give up because he faced adversity. He kept active. It was Thomas Edison who invented the light bulb, but you know, he failed 1,000 times before he succeeded. In Ephesians chapter 5, it says, "Make the best use of the time." And so stay active. Did you know statistically, even if you make a wrong decision, you're better than not doing anything at all? Because a wrong decision is at least movement. It's activity. And it leads to more movement, even if that movement is to fix the mistake. And before you know it, all that movement works together and you have overcome the challenge and you have walked out of that valley. And so there's adversity, there's opportunity, there's activity. And finally, consequently, you will see a positive outcome. Notice in verse 14, "And most of the brothers, having become confident in the Lord by my imprisonment, are much more bold to speak the word without fear." Notice how Paul says most of the brothers are more confident, more bold, he says. He doesn't say all the brothers. He doesn't say they're fearless. He says most of the brothers are confident to speak the word more boldly. It isn't perfect, but it's gotten a lot better. And the point for us is this. Oftentimes, you will have to look for a positive outcome in adversity. In other words, you will have to make a choice. What will you focus on in life? For some people, they only focus on the negative. That's all they see. If those people were next to Paul, they would point out that, yeah, most of the brothers, but not all of them, Paul. There's some people you didn't reach. They're not fearless yet because it just says they're more bold. And not only that, you're in jail, Paul. This hasn't served you very well. What good did all of this do anyway? They would focus on the negative. But notice Paul focuses on the positive. Most of the brothers are confident. They're more bold to speak the word without fear. Paul was willing to look for the positive outcome and celebrate whatever God provided. You know, in Luke chapter 15, it says, "There is more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than 99 righteous people who didn't need it." How many of us would have that same perspective? How many people are willing to say that something was a success and celebrate the success and rejoice after all of it if all of their hard work resulted in only one person responding? Suppose you spent everything you had, tens of thousands of dollars, you gave up everything you owned, all of your worldly possessions, all of your hope for the future, you told the whole world about this thing, you advertised it, you put everything you had into it, and then you made it free for anyone, just come and get it. And one person showed up. Most people would only see all the people who didn't come. But the Bible says that heaven rejoices over the one who did. In Psalm 27, it says, "Give me not up to the will of my adversaries, for false witnesses have risen up against me. I believe," it says, "that I shall look upon the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living." What about you? What do you look upon during those times in life when adversity comes your way? What do you focus on? Do you look at all the negative? Do you linger on what's going wrong? Or do you look for the positive outcome? Do you celebrate what the Lord has done? Paul did. It says here, most of the brothers are confident in the Lord and they're more bold to speak the word. You know, I hate to tell you, but there is no magic formula for avoiding adversity in life. It will happen. It will happen often. And it happens to everyone. It is a normal thing. Jesus even said in Matthew chapter 5, "For so they persecuted the prophets before you." In other words, if you're facing opposition from the world, you're in good company. And so don't let it get you down. Don't get discouraged. Instead, look at this as an opportunity to maybe go in a different direction, to be active in a different way. And then celebrate all the goodness that God will do. And if you keep that frame of mind and that perspective, you will be in a position to overcome adversity in life.